Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss.
I call shot like a blow.
In the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Welcome back. And one of the narratives in the NBA playoffs has been the poor free throw shooting of some of the NBA's biggest names and stars here.
Jeez.
I mean, Giannis has really struggled at the line. He's been at 62%.
With two 10-second violations at the free throw line. I've never even seen that.
Right. That is unparalleled.
Before this,
I mean,
yeah.
And then Ben Simmons shooting
32%
in the playoffs. These guys have never been known to be great free throw shooters. But 32%. Come on, Ben.
He's missed 26 of 39 free throws. Did you hear that? 26 of 39. He was 4 of 14 in the last game.
So the question on the table, if we took the gloss and we put her in the middle of a basketball court, and we might even turn up a lot of fan noise to create the environment, could you shoot better than Ben Simmons?
I'd even add a blindfold.
Oh,
I got this.
All right. Could you shoot better than Giannis at 62%?
With a blindfold, no.
Right.
Without a blindfold, I've got a shot. I'm not kidding.
No, I don't doubt. I mean, I'm sure. Ron, you're putting your headsets on. I think you're
Thinking, Ron, talk to us.
Who are you siding with here, the gloss or Ben Simmons?
Oh, the gloss.
Got to go with the gloss.
Yes. I mean, it's
Thank
to this
you,
point, because I wanted to jump on and let you guys know what's actually happening in Philadelphia.
Yeah, tell
that
us.
That people have been putting up missing person posters of Ben Simmons on telephone poles.
No, that is accurate.
It's terrible.
I mean, you get paid that much. You are a star. Where are you?
He will be on some milk cartons coming soon, right? He has to be.
Seriously.
Crazy. The free throw shooting, though, bothers me the most, because it just seems like a very addressable, fixable thing. You just go out and practice time and time and time again. You should be able, there are mechanics, there's a way to get that done. These guys need to really work on that part of
their
game.
Well, it's not sexy. That's why they're not working. It's not going to be a highlight reel. But when you are a liability, Ben Simmons, 4 of 14 in the last game and 26 of 39 overall. Woo!
All right, when we come back, we're going to get Chris Campisi of SportsMap.com in Houston, and we're going to talk to him about the state of the Astros and how they fit into the AL picture. Up next, Chris Campisi, Boston Gloss, Sports Map Radio.
It's the boss.
In the gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive Insurance guest line, because drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Quoting, home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. All right, joining us here is Chris Campisi. He writes for sportsmap.com. He covers the Houston Astros, and he is knowledgeable about all things MLB. Chris, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
Well, great to have you back. Let's talk about the state of the Astros. They've been on a great run. Altuve is hitting again. How are you feeling about the Astros? They're still, though, a second-place team in the AL West behind the Athletics.
They have been playing really, really good baseball. And if you consider the strength of schedule, if you will, the Astros have been doing it against some pretty good teams. I mean, they took care of the Red Sox, in the games they played against them. They played the Blue Jays, the Twins, they arguably could have swept the Padres if not for some bullpen woes a few weekends ago. So they're doing it against good teams. You know, Oakland A's are taking care of business as well. But I think, you know, things will even out. Right now, the Astros, to me, appear like the stronger team based on who they've been playing and what they've been doing against them.
And, Chris, I love last night to open the four-game series against Chicago White Sox, who are sitting atop the AL Central. They had a 10-2 beatdown against, really, they scored at will against arguably one of the best pitching staffs, if not the best pitching staff in Major League Baseball in Chicago. Urquidy was outstanding, 4 hits, 2 earned runs. To me, it was their most impressive overall outing from all stages of the game. What did you see last night?
It really was impressive. I did not see any of these games being blowouts in this four-game series. I still wouldn't expect that to happen the rest of these games, but who knows? I mean, everything is firing for the Astros, especially on offense right now, and that's even without, you know, last night, no Kyle Tucker, no Alex Bregman. You know, you still have guys. Abraham Toro comes up and, you know, gets 4 RBIs. They really are, you know, clicking right now, so their offense can carry them, but they haven't necessarily had to because pitching hasn't been all that bad either.
And you mentioned Alex Bregman. Looks like we're not going to be seeing him for a while with the right quad strain. What do you make of that? What are we going to be able to fill? Are they going to be able to fill in okay? And how long do you see him potentially being out?
I think it could be, you know, a lengthy IL stint, if nothing else, you know, to not rush it and to have him for the back half of the season. You know, so wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, out until after, you know, All-Star break it. That. I think for now, I think the Astros can absorb that. But, you know, if another couple of key players go down, then you're starting to wonder. For now, it seems like they're able to absorb it and do okay. But, you know, there's a fine line between losing a few more key players and all of a sudden you're scrambling.
We're talking to Chris Campisi. He writes all about the Astros on sportsmap.com in Houston. Want to ask you, with Bregman gone, The Athletic has written this article this morning about Abraham Toro's coming up. He's been pulled up from AAA Sugarland, and that it's an opportunity for the Astros to show off what Toro can do, as he might be somebody they could sell at the trading deadline and perhaps get some capital back. What's your take on Abraham Toro? What have you seen of him, and what are the prospects? What's the ceiling on this prospect?
I think he does have a relatively high ceiling. Don't know necessarily what him alone could get you at the trade deadline. I think the Astros have an interesting trade deadline coming up because they definitely could use some bullpen help. They could potentially use more, you know, pitching prospects to help them after this year when some guys go away. So it'll be interesting. Toro could be one of those pieces. The Astros do have the luxury of having quite a few other good infielders in their farm system that could come up, you know, next year after presumably Correa is gone. So, you know, they do have a little bit of flexibility, but it'll be interesting to see what they do because they are tight in some areas where they need to hold on to things.
So you mentioned the bullpen, which has been a weak spot of this team. Whom would you like to see them go get at the trading deadline? I mean, are there any names you're targeting? It just feels like they've got to strengthen the back end of the bullpen. The rotation has been great, but the bullpen makes me nervous.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few names out there. I think the top one I've seen that the Astros would have had their names tied to, so to speak, is Richard Rodriguez and the Pirates. You know, the Pirates are not a great team right now, and they have a really good potential closer on their team that doesn't really get a lot of work. He has control through 2023, so you get a couple of years with him. So that would be somebody, you know, you'd like to see the Astros kind of go after and get for a couple of years so that they're not just getting somebody that's necessarily a rental for the rest of this year.
When we look at this spider tack issue, the whole question of doctoring up balls on the part of pitchers, how has that permeated the clubhouse at the Astros? Do you see this as a factor? It's just sort of interesting. There are some teams that seem to be more affected by it than others. Maybe some teams had pitchers who were using this.
The Yankees and the Rays, as hearing from Garrett Cole and Tyler Glass now.
Well, sure. I mean, they're just teams that maybe have invested more effort in that or viewed it as something that was more relevant and more helpful. What about the Astros?
The Astros have not, you know, been as vocal or seemed as worried about the issue. I don't know if that, you know, means that maybe they haven't been using it and they're not worried, or, you know, they believe that once they stop, they'll still be okay. Hard to tell. We'll find out next Monday, I guess, whenever the rules go into effect. It'll be quite a week next week to follow that storyline. But there has not been as much sort of urgency or, mention of it in the Astros side.
which is a nice break for Houston. I mean, the only Houston pitcher I've heard tied in this whole foreign substance situation is Justin Verlander. And he's not pitching for us right now anyway, even though he's on the roster. But so interesting to me, Chris, that we had, you know, Gerrit Cole for an entire year. I don't think we've heard 10 words out of his mouth. And in this last week, my gosh, he's almost looks like he's ready to cry in press conferences, just pleading for Major League Baseball to work with them on that. What do you make of that? It's just it's mind blowing to me.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it from the pitcher's side. You know, they do get used to doing something for almost halfway into the season, and all of a sudden you're going to change up their game. And, you know, they'll make the argument that, you know, it's for the hitter's safety. If, you know, if they start to get out of control, they can start hitting batters. I don't know so much about that as opposed to, you know, they're worried about, you know, their numbers going down or not being able to get their strikeouts. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think obviously you can tell some guys rely on it a lot more than others, and, you know, whether these injuries are going to start popping up truly because of this or not, it's going to be interesting. But it happening in the middle of the season is definitely something to monitor. I definitely didn't personally see it coming down in the middle of the season. It kind of seemed like they were trying to get a hold on it so that they could do something in the off season. So for it to fall in the middle of the season is kind of interesting. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, you know, what seems so interesting about it, and correct me if I'm wrong here for sure, Chris, is that it probably wouldn't have come up in the middle of the season, but Trevor Bauer forced the issue, which is so funny because he's got videos of himself, you know, clearly putting things on his glove before the game. And it's like he wanted that to get out. And he really forced the hand of Major League Baseball to do something and do something now. And I know that he and Gerrit Cole, they are not friends. They have, you know, been rivals since their days at UCLA and certainly now in Major League Baseball as well. And maybe that was his way of saying, I'm not going to sit here and watch your $325 million, you know, salary be here without a little taint on it. So you're going to have to answer to this. And I don't know. It seems kind of dramatic. It seems a little behind the scenes. But to me, it was Bauer that forced the hands of Major League Baseball at this juncture.
Yeah. I think there's, you know, some truth to what you're saying there. Whether it was purely Bauer or, you know, him starting the conversation, right, that kind of spiraled out of control and MLB had to do damage control, it definitely had a light shine on it that the MLB felt like they couldn't ignore for another, you know, 6 months. So they're going to address it now. So, yeah, I mean, the conversation definitely started to pick up here in the recent months and weeks, and they had to step in. And, yeah, that's what it is.
We've been talking to Chris Campisi. He writes all about the Astros on sportsmap.com. You should go to sportsmap.com if you're an Astros fan and be sure to have his daily write-up delivered into your inbox. Chris Campisi on sportsmap.com. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, not a problem. You guys have a good weekend.
You're listening to The Boss
and The Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Carla, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you, and you can go and get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store, or they'll even bring it out to you curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered to you right at your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your parts quickly at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
I love the curbside.
You do, don't you?
I do. It's my jam.
All right. We get to shift gears here now and talk a little NFL. It's a football Friday all
Take
of a sudden.
It.
One of the interesting narratives in this offseason to me has been how little media coverage has happened to the Raiders. The Raiders have seemingly been quiet. And John Gruden is a guy who's a professional media guy. He was on Monday Night Football. He's been so good in front of the camera, so good in front of the microphone. And yet the Raiders have been very, very quiet all offseason until now. This week there were two different revelations. Derek Carr talking about his life with the Raiders, and then John Gruden talking about the state of the Raiders. So let's talk about each one of those. First, Derek Carr saying he wanted to be a Raider for life. My first quick observation is, though he's saying that, it just seems like there's always a rumor that somehow Derek Carr is going to get traded or that the Raiders are going to go out and get a Deshaun Watson or an Aaron Rodgers. there seems to be a lack of stability at that position, or that John Gruden always likes the next quarterback he can go find. But Derek Carr is committed to your Raiders organization.
He is. He is all in, and I'm so glad, because I think he embodies every single thing a team would want for their signal caller. I mean, he is a professional. He has no drama. He's a man of faith. He galvanizes a locker room. He's everything you want. And the narrative that you're talking about is real, and it's out there. But it didn't come from Gruden. It didn't come from Derek Carr. I don't know where it came from. But I will say, possibly where it came from is his lack of disrespect, honestly. Like, the Raiders have not had great seasons. There's no, you know, he was on an MVP season, his second to last season in Oakland, before his leg was, got a broken leg and then was done. You know, they had Connor Cook, you know, or Carson Cook, Connor Cook, not getting out of the first round of the playoffs. But other than that, he is the most disrespected star in the NFL to me, and certainly the most disrespected quarterback with his talent. He averages almost 4,000 passing yards, 25 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions since he entered the league in 2014. I mean, the Raiders' lack of success has nothing to do with Derek Carr.
Yeah.
This is on the defense. This is on some really bad drafts. This is on coaching. And you're dismantling an O-line. I mean, this is not on Derek Carr. He's a three-time Pro Bowler. He's only had one winning season since he came into the league in 2014. And this is how much he loves it. I want to be a Raider for life. I'd probably quit if I had to go anywhere else. Like, what a refreshing departure from Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, you contrast
Deshaun
that
Watson,
to other.
Anybody. Yes, yeah. I mean, Russell Wilson.
Right.
Who flip-flops.
Right.
You know, I mean, really, I love Derek Carr in Las Vegas. I love Derek Carr as a lifetime Raider. And he is everything that organization wants as the face of the franchise. He just needs respect.
Okay, that was Derek Carr speaking. And then John Gruden came out in the context that some people have been questioning the personnel decision to the Raiders. And John Gruden came back and said, well, we like what we've done. We like it on paper. And now some of these decisions include Kenyon Drake. They signed him to a big two-year, $11 million deal, and the drafting of Alex Leatherwood in the first round. Gruden says, no, these are good decisions. We like them on paper. And he went on to say, we have proved we can win on the road. We can compete in the AFC West. Now we just need to prove we can go win at a much higher level. But, yeah, a lot of their moves have been questioned. And certainly Alex Leatherwood and the signing of Kenyon Drake, those two stand out this offseason as questionable moves by the Raiders.
Yes, those are questionable moves, and it's on the offensive side of the ball. What he's talking about on paper to me is that, because you're right, remember they handed the Chiefs their only real loss of the season, the one in the last game.
Last year, that's right.
Yeah, last year in an exciting game at Arrowhead. They also beat the New Orleans Saints early on in Allegiant Stadium on Monday Night Football in the brightest lights with Drew Brees. So they have got the personnel to be able to do what they're doing. The defense has been an enormous problem. So he brings in former Jacksonville coach Gus Bradley as their defensive coordinator. Trade for Yannick Ngakoue, who had 16 sacks over the past two seasons. So they're going to pair. The defense, to me, is what really needed help. And this is what's not sexy and fun to talk about. But they're going to pair Yannick Ngakoue with Max Crosby, who had 17 sacks over the last two seasons. This is going to be – and Gus Bradley is the one who brought in Ngakoue in Jacksonville. So they already have a great symbiotic relationship. I think that's what Gruden's talking about on paper. I like what we have. Do I love that he took Alex Leatherwood in the first round? No, because I think Leatherwood would have been there in the second round. But I love what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball, at least with this situation. And this needs to be addressed, seriously addressed. Kenyon Drake was a head-scratching move, because they've got Josh Jacobs and they've got Darren Waller, you know, a record-setting tight end. And so I think they're going to be exciting, and I want to see, I want to give Gus Bradley a chance. And Ngakoue and Crosby paired together, I love that tandem. Let's see what they can do.
Yeah, that's a muscle on that defensive side of the ball they've added. And they need Alex Leatherwood to perform well on the offensive line, because the offensive line's had a lot of turnover. Trent Brown is not there.
Yeah.
There's some holes that have been there. And now, I mean, Derek Carr's fate does depend upon an offensive line. He's got lots of weapons around him. Josh Jacobs is a great guy to have behind him. but they need an offensive line to support Derek Carr, and that will remain to be. I mean, Leatherwood's just going to need to step into a role very, very quickly.
Yes, he will.
In contrast to the harmony of Derek Carr and the Raiders, there is Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, gosh.
And he is a complicated fellow.
He is. I mean, I have to give Mark Murphy credit. He's spot on.
He diagnosed it well. And complicated can be a neutral statement. I mean, there are complicated things about your life and my life and everybody's life, right? But he does describe Aaron Rodgers as a complicated fellow. But Aaron Rodgers is describing himself as sort of a guy who's very peaceful, calm, and had a quiet offseason. What do you make of all that? How do you explain this?
Well, he's making those comments with a T-shirt that says, I'm offended.
Yes.
So we've got that.
So that in itself is sort of a contradictory, complicated. The comments are, life is good, life is serene, all is well, but I'm offended on the T-shirt. Even that, see, is a yin and a yang.
He has got the Green Bay Packers by the tail, and he is just having so much fun watching this go down, which is really sad to me. I mean, he's not going to play for Green Bay. The one I feel badly for is Matt LaFleur, because the guy has done nothing but worked so well with Aaron Rodgers, has been strong in what he's wanted as a head coach and in his system and how he's going to run things. And, yes, did he make a mistake in the playoff game against the Bucs? Yes, he did, by not putting the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands. But Aaron Rodgers, to me, he is a complicated fella. I'm going to give him that. And he's really here's what I don't understand. Aaron Rodgers is an MVP quarterback. He is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. He is absolutely outstanding. Where Green Bay Packers, where they lost him to me, was the draft a couple years ago when they took Jordan Love. Not that they took Jordan Love. I understand that. They didn't have Brent Hundley as a serviceable backup. They needed a serviceable backup because injuries happen in the NFL. So you've got to have that behind Aaron Rodgers. Where the front office in Green Bay made the mistake was not telling Aaron Rodgers, hey, this is where we're going to draft in the first round. It's going to be our last pick. This is why we're taking him, because we can't take a chance if you go down. There's nothing more to that. You're not competing for a job. You are our guy. You are our number one. You are MVP, super winning. We love you. Super Bowl winning. Great. Because they were not transparent with him, that's where everything went sideways.
Yep.
And I also want to say, Aaron Rodgers, you are an MVP, Super Bowl winning quarterback. Are you really scared of Jordan Love? If you are, then you're not as great as you say you are. And I do think you are that great. So why are you worried about this guy? If I'm you, I am putting on, I'm like, this guy, I'm going to sniff the turf. Not under my watch. And that is essentially what happened. So why do you care? Why are you making a big deal about it?
When I just look at that situation from afar, I look at a Packers team that is poised to make a deep playoff run. I think they were better than the Buccaneers. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers snuck by them last year, but the Packers should have won that game. They could be a Super Bowl team next year, except for this one big, big problem. And it's so hard to get all the pieces to line up just right. And I know Tom Brady made it seem like you can do it in 1 year and you can make a transition and go from the Patriots to the Buccaneers and be a one-year wonder like that. But that usually is not the case.
No.
It takes time. It takes team building. It takes assembling pieces. And they have them there. And Aaron Rodgers is blowing that up. So that's the troubling reality for the Packers. And that's why I do think there probably is some portion of the fan base that's frustrated with Aaron Rodgers, because if I'm a fan, I'm thinking, my gosh, we have it. We have a chance here, but Aaron's not happy. Versus the fandom who is perhaps mad at Mark Murphy and others saying, just get him happy. Regardless, it's a mess. I do want to go to a couple other situations because it's really interesting. Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots, he's not happy. Xavier Howard of the Dolphins, he's not. Two cornerbacks, two elite
corners.
Both contract related. I mean, Howard's interesting because, of course, he's been the best corner on that team. But a year ago, the Dolphins went out and signed Byron Jones. They got him away from the Cowboys, gave him a big contract. But then Howard outplayed him. So Howard's saying, no, I want a renewal of my contract.
And I get that. He's got the credit to back it up, for
sure. He has played well. And arguably, yes, he deserves better than Byron Jones economically. But there is this notion. The reality is the last contract is always the best contract. And if you're not happy with what you just signed a year or two ago, you don't get the rights to just walk out. I know they do, but that's a very odd dynamic that just continues to happen.
It's the Russell Wilson situation.
Sure it is. Hey, when we come back, we're going to look at who is most likely to win the Comeback of the Year award in the NFL. Who's most likely to get it next year? You're listening to the Boston Globe Sports Map Radio.
The Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And as we look at the NFL season to come, one of the things that strikes me is last year at this time, it was almost a fait accompli. It was almost a certainty that Alex Smith was going to win the Comeback of the Year award because he had done so much.
He faced death.
He literally had overcome so much. And at this moment, well, last year at this time, we knew he was going to play. He was going to be on that Washington football team roster. And it was exciting. And he really had the award locked up. Looking ahead this year, it is far less clear who will win the Comeback of the Year award. I mean, there are some impressive names. I guess what it speaks to is there were a lot of names, big-time names, who had very severe injuries and were knocked out. But let me run a few by you.
Let's hear it.
Certainly Dak Prescott is a candidate. Dak, of course, injured in, I guess, week four last year. Devastating injury, carted off the field. He's now back playing. And he's poised to have a great year if the Cowboys' offensive line stays healthy. All the pieces are there. I mean, they have perhaps the best receiving core in the NFL with CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup. And then, of course, the backfield includes Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard. So Dak's poised to have a good year. And if the Cowboys' offense is what everybody thinks it can be, Dak is on that short list.
Well, and I you saw what happened to the Cowboys when Dak went down.
Yep.
As he went, the entire team went. And I really like the addition of Dan Quinn as the defensive coordinator. I think that's going to be a big difference. So I like that. That helps the offense when the defense can hold its own. So let's see what happens there.
All right, here's another name for Comeback of the Year award, Joe Burrow. I mean, he looked great as a rookie last year.
On a tear until his tear.
And now that offense at Jamar Chase, the great wide receiver whom Burrow played with and really wanted him to come and join that Bengals team. They have a chemistry. Apparently, the way Chase describes it, Burrow could close his eyes and find Chase on the field and throw it to him well. They have a really, really nice connection, so that may well help Burrow in his pursuit to be Comeback Player of the Year.
And just in case he is, quote, seeing ghosts like other new quarterbacks, that'll be helpful that he can do it with his eyes closed to Chase. That'll
yes.
Perfect.
How about Nick Bosa? I mean, he's a stud.
Yeah, he's a stud.
He'll be back on that 49ers defense, and that defense is poised to step up again. 49ers, by all accounts, are on the short list of Super Bowl contenders. I mean, health
being determined,
yeah,
of course.
The health is really what unraveled that team last year.
It did. But you're right. They've got all the pieces, and then they've added Trey Lance, which is exciting because we know that Jimmy G, you know, he has a problem with availability and durability. So let's hope we don't need to see Trey Lance, but they've got a great insurance if they do.
All right, here's another name. I want to see if you're buying or selling.
I'm already selling.
Comeback Player of the Year, Carson Wentz.
I am a seller.
What?
Oh, my goodness. I think this is a crazy trade. But, you know, reuniting him with his old OC as the head coach there. And
that's what you have to believe. Frank Reich, he can get him back on track. The interesting thing, I mean, the Colts, that trade, it might well turn into a first-round pick for Carson Wentz. The contingency there is how many games Wentz starts, but the Colts are going to have to start him. He just may not play well. It's the contingency is the number of games, not the performance on the field. But the Colts really don't, I mean, they're not looking back. They are counting on this guy. They're going to give him a lot of games to play, and they really believe they can get him right.
And I just don't have confidence. I look at him since he's come into the league, and you know, not only is durability an issue, but decision making is an issue. And this far into your NFL career, decision making shouldn't be an issue. And I don't love how he is in a locker room either, as we saw in Philly. So good luck.
Here's another name poised for a big comeback: Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, love it.
He is an elite, dynamic, exciting runner. ACL tear last year with the Giants. He returns. To me, the question is, how good will the offense be?
That's depending on how Daniel Jones is developing.
Daniel Jones, a question mark, certainly, because they need, for Saquon Barkley to have a great year, they're going to need to convert some third downs and stay on the field longer and give Barkley more touches. And Daniel Jones is going to be a big part of that. The other guy who I think is a question mark for that Giants offense is Jason Garrett. Of course, the former Cowboys head coach, he's now the offensive coordinator for the Giants. And I'm just not sure that he's the creative mastermind to take the Giants' offense to an elite level.
Do you think he's a great developer of quarterbacks, as he was one himself? You would know. You're our Cowboys.
I'm not sure. I mean, you might want to, he could get some credit for the development of Dak Prescott. He might get some credit for the development of Tony Romo. I mean, they played together, Romo and Garrett.
Right.
But Garrett was alongside him, and then Garrett became the head coach ultimately. I just don't know that I feel a lot of comfort or excitement about what Jason Garrett can do with an offense. I'm really not sold on Jason Garrett. I think it was amazing, the level of mediocrity with the Cowboys for so long. Jerry Jones gave him a ton of rope. They kept going and going and going. They did develop Dak Prescott. That's the only positive there. But really, when you think about it, he got fired. And then, of course, he went to the Giants. He's the offensive coordinator there. And he just feels like a recycled head coach who's now in a coordinator position. I don't think he's an offensive mastermind. I mean, frankly, when things have gone well for the Cowboys, it's Kellen Moore's offense. I just don't think it's Jason Garrett's success. So,
well, and you couple what you just said about Jason Garrett with the fact that your signal caller is Daniel Jones.
Yeah. So really, it's up to Garrett to develop Daniel Jones there. And Daniel Jones,
he's got a long way to go,
is a huge question mark. He had real issues with turning over the ball last year, and that will certainly hurt Saquon Barkley's candidacy to be comeback player of the year. I got one more name I want to run by you. OBJ. Odell Beckham Jr., comeback player of the year. Buying or selling?
Selling. I'm not even thinking about it.
What?
He's not going to make it a whole season. He never does. And while he's got some beautiful highlight reels,
yep,
it doesn't translate to anything to help any team that he's been on.
Yeah.
And so I just really don't see. I hope I'm wrong. His talent is unparalleled. And Cleveland's got pieces on both sides of the ball. They're stacked. Their running back tandem of Chubb and Hunt is ridiculous.
Yep.
And then he's got, you know, you pair OBJ on the other side with Jarvis Landry. I mean, they've got great people. I am a seller. How about you?
No, I'm a seller. My problem with OBJ is he is that loud diva receiver in the locker room
who wears a watch onto the field.
And I think Baker Mayfield is a better quarterback when he's running a play action and then he's following his reads, not when he's running his play action and feeling like he has to feed the ball to the diva who's going to come back and be a loud voice in the huddle saying, "You're not getting me the ball, you're not getting me the ball." No, that offense works really well, and Jarvis Landry on the other side is a great weapon. And as you've noted, the running game is great. Let's run the offense. Let's run the progressions. Let's not have one guy who's demanding a whole bunch of attention. And that's where I question the value of OBJ to that team. No doubt, he's a physical freak and a great talent. He's one of those guys, I sort of feel like all the attention and all the buzz he got for that one great catch on Sunday Night Football that had
catapulted his career.
Oh my gosh, Chris Collinsworth was gushing and gushing and gushing to the point where OBJ became a household name. And I just think it didn't do him well. I just think if he would just be quiet, focused on the field, not worry about which watch he's going to wear out on the field, he could be great and be on a team that really has no holes. But he's a question mark to me. And the consistency of Baker Mayfield, the question marks on the Browns. So, no, OBJ is not on my list to be a comeback player of the year.
So, speaking of, you bring up consistency with Baker Mayfield. So, you know, there's several quarterbacks that are up for extensions, you know, in that quarterback class.
Yep.
Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield's one of them. Who's going to get extended early? Do you think Kevin Stefanski, given the exactly what you noted, the inconsistency of Baker Mayfield, are they going to go ahead and extend him now or wait?
Well, so Josh Allen's a no-brainer.
Yep.
He has proven already he's a guy. The development of Josh Allen over the last year and two
has skyrocketed.
Incredible. Love what's happening there with the Bills. I think the Browns are committed to Baker. The fandom loves Baker Mayfield. No, they're going to renew him or extend him.
But are they going to do it now or are they going to wait till his fifth-year option?
Well, so if I'm a team, I would always try to wait. I mean, it's the media, it's the players who demand the timeline. The timeline is the timeline. I mean, there's a reason. If you take a guy in the first round, you have the opportunity to extend and do the fifth-year option. I would always try to wait. I mean, it's in the interest of the team to wait, learn more, see how time develops. Of course, it's interest in the player to get the big contract now and a monster signing bonus. I think that the Browns ought to try to wait it out. I think to see a bigger body of work, a longer body of work on Baker Mayfield for a guy who has been inconsistent, to see if he can get to one higher level where he is. I mean, if he was maybe the 11th to 14th best quarterback in the NFL last year, can he get into the top 10? Can he take his team beyond just the divisional round in the playoffs to an AFC championship game? There's one more level I'd love to see from Baker before I do that. Now, the problem, of course, is that lots of teams face that awkward decision that before they really want to make the decision. I think the Ravens are in that spot. I don't know that I believe that Lamar Jackson is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And I know there are a lot of people say, oh my gosh, he was the MVP. He's extraordinary. There's nobody like Lamar Jackson. But my view of that is that to be a Super Bowl MVP, you have to be a prolific passer. You have to read defenses. You have to be able to throw every kind of pass. You've got to be more than what he is, which is a really cool player on the field, a guy who can do that RPO very well, who is electric running the ball. But his ability to throw the skinny post on a rope 22 yards downfield over the linebackers in front of the safeties in a precise way, consistently, I haven't seen that from Lamar Jackson. And unfortunately, the Ravens are going to have their hand forced before I think it's clear that Lamar Jackson is a Super Bowl quarterback.
Well, I agree with you. I think they are going to have their hands forced, and I think they are going to sign him early because the salary cap this year, post-pandemic, is lower.
Yep.
So that benefits the Ravens for sure to lock him up. And, you know, I think he is clearly developing, and they're getting more weapons around him to help his passing game. And, you know, something that it's hard to put a dollar amount on. Well, first of all, he's a freakish athlete. He's absolutely an athlete of all athletes. But he also professionally, he's not an issue. He's a professional. He comports himself very well. He's very well spoken. He is a great face of the franchise. And that's someone that you want to hang your hat on as well. I do agree with Baker Mayfield that don't do it now. I mean, yes, the cap is going to be lower. It's going to be bigger next year. But you need more of a body of work. I mean, Kevin Stefanski has done, you know, things with Kirk Cousins and stuff like that. He wants to see more consistency. And Baker's an issue. I mean, he does some provocative things. I mean, he doesn't have the pristine, you know, reputation that Lamar Jackson does. So I agree for a number of reasons that hold off on Baker, but go ahead and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson need their money now.
Sort of funny because I go to comparables a lot, and when I look at Lamar Jackson and I try to compare him to Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, I don't see a Lamar Jackson as a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I don't see, if you look at the last 15 Super Bowl winning quarterbacks.
Even Russell Wilson, you don't see a similarity there.
No, because Russell Wilson throws a beautiful pass. Yeah. Lamar Jackson looks mechanical. He doesn't look natural throwing the ball. Russell Wilson has one of the best deep balls I've ever seen. And so, yeah, they both move around well. But the risk is that Lamar Jackson, they're working on him on this, but that he's a guy who uses his legs to set up his arm.
Sure.
What you really want,
Colin Kaepernick did the same.
That's right. Yeah. What you really want is a quarterback who's got an arm and occasionally uses his legs. And anyway, that's the distinction. It's hard for me to come up with a comparable, a Super Bowl winning quarterback like Lamar Jackson. with Baker Mayfield, I guess the comparable I was thinking about the other day is early in his career, Tony Romo. They move around. They have a similar size. They can make all the throws, but Romo was inconsistent early on. And let's face it, over the time, and I love Tony Romo. I'm an old Cowboys fan, but Romo didn't.
You're a young Cowboys fan.
Yeah. Romo didn't do that well in the playoffs. There was a ceiling. He just couldn't get him up to the higher level. And to me, those are the two comparables, Mayfield and Romo. But would you sign a guy to be a Romo? Would you sign him as your franchise quarterback? Yes. Lamar Jackson, I recognize there's all kinds of talent and excitement. His athleticism's off the charts. But I'm having trouble finding a comparable that gets me excited.
Okay, fair.
All right, we will wrap it up when we come back. We've got one more NFL topic we will hit. You are listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Kane is in the building.
You're listening to The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
So one of the things about the NFL offseason that's still hanging out there is there's still some good free agent names available for the taking. I mean, there's Sheldon Richardson, the standout defensive tackle, Richard Sherman. I mean, would you pick them up for your team?
Oh, 100%. Richard Sherman's still got, he's got wheels. He's ready to go. He wants to be with a contender.
Right. He should be at this stage of his career. He's in his 30s now, but I think he's still got something to offer. He may not have the speed, the elite speed that he had early in his career.
But he can cover.
I've often wondered whether he ought to be moved to safety, where speed is less of a factor. He's a big guy. His size is certainly something that is attractive to a lot of defenses, particularly the safety position.
Philly could use him.
Well, yeah, Philly could use a lot of things right now.
They can.
All right, we thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.